I'm Ryan Miller, Crops Extension Educator. Earlier this morning, we recorded an episode of the Strategic Farming Field Notes program. Strategic Farming Field Notes is a weekly program addressing current crop production topics. A live webinar is hosted at 8 a.m. on Wednesdays throughout the cropping season. During the live webinar, participants can join in the discussion and get questions answered. An audio recording of the live program is released following the webinar via podcast platforms. Thanks, and remember to tune in weekly for a discussion on current cropping and crop management topics.
Well, good morning. My name is Dave Nicolai. I'm the University of Minnesota Extension Educator in field crops located at Farmington, Minnesota. We want to welcome you today to our Strategic Farming Field Notes program. We're happy that you joined us for this session. The title of our session today is basically Corn and Soybeans 2024, a crop year in review and a forecast. These sessions are brought to you by the University of Minnesota Extension and generous support from the Soybean Research and Promotion Council, along with the Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Council. We welcome Dr. Jeff Coulter, University of Minnesota Extension Corn Specialist, along with Dr. Seth Knave, University of Minnesota Extension Soybean Specialist. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff. Coulter is with us this morning. And Jeff, some of the USDA reports came out for corn. They look pretty good. But before I jump to that, let's talk a little bit about crop progress. And the Minnesota Ag News and Crop Progress and Condition Report came out this last Monday. And they indicated as of this past weekend that corn had reached about the dough stage was at 62% of the corn crop in Minnesota. Now, I believe obviously it's jumped up since that point in time. It is about 10 days, a little bit behind where we are last year, but we're going to be going on to the den stage. But basically, they indicated that corn condition was 61% good to excellent in terms of that. But we're moving right along. We've got good subsoil moisture, at least 79% adequate and 15% surplus, because, of course, it did rain quite a bit here in the state of Minnesota. So what are some basic crop conditions that you hear from folks, Jeff, either on the phone or in person and so forth across as you have traveled and been in contact with folks around the state of Minnesota?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Well, it's highly variable out there. You know, the corn that is tall, that looks healthy, looks kind of normal. I walked some of that. It looks like the yield potential is pretty good on that. It's obviously not going to be record breaking, but it definitely looks like in a lot of cases, it's going to be around 200 bushels an acre, give or take. But then even within that big corn, you'll see, smaller plants, ears that are smaller than normal. There's just some unevenness. Also, in that large corn, oftentimes the stand isn't ideal. So, we don't have the targeted 32,000-33,000 plants per acre out there, and in many cases it's closer to 30,000. So that's going to take its toll on the yield a little bit as well. And then we got these areas where the corn has received excess moisture and in many cases has also been nitrogen deficient. And that corn, it's easy to spot. It's shorter for one. The stalks are smaller and the ears are very poor. In those cases, the yields could be like 100 bushels an acre, maybe 150 at the most. So it's going to be variable. I think it's really hard to get a good yield estimate at this point, just due to all the variability. Another thing we saw this year, especially like in South Central Minnesota, there's been fields that have had either spring applied urea or spring applied ammonia pre-plant. And the spring applied urea corn, in many cases, is shorter and is nitrogen deficient now, whereas the corn that had spring applied ammonia looks like it's not quite as nitrogen deficient and is a larger crop. It's taller, it just looks better. So I think there's some issues there where, depending on the nitrogen source and timing, that type of thing, we see differences in N deficiency. And that's contributing to some of this variability. I think the yield estimates of, I think NAS said 185 bushels an acre. I suppose statewide that's probably accurate, but in some fields that seems like it's going to be quite high. So I guess this is probably a year where we're just kind of guessing until the combine really rolls. You know, we can go out there and take yield estimates and stuff, but how accurate are we going to be, especially when we consider these drowned out areas and stuff? So, I mean, if one really wanted to get good at estimating yield on their farm, they'd probably need to do some sort of like aerial imagery with drone or NDVI or something to try to estimate the amount of area that is, you know, poor, and then get yield estimates in both the good corn and in the poorer corn to try to get a weighted average.
What do you think about some of this corn that is shorter, been delayed from one reason or another, but has pollinated, set in ear? Does it ever tend to catch up, so to speak, with the rest of the field? Will it produce very many viable kernels, or is it just going to be behind all the way through harvest and that in terms of black layer, et cetera?
I think it's going to be behind pretty much most of the year. I don't think it's going to yield too well. One thing to be cautious on that is like the harvest losses, you know, so oftentimes we take that for granted. We just roll through the fields and get them harvested. But, you know, it only takes two kernels per square foot to cause one bushel per acre yield loss at harvest. So, you know, you want to kind of be mindful on what the harvest losses are and make any adjustments on the headers if needed.
Well, I think that's an important. I know I have a weed science background, and we always talk about volunteer corn the next year, Jeff. And, you know, that's the contribution and having to deal with that is kind of a conundrum in terms of it's an impact on yield and if you're going to be rotating into soybeans. So certainly combine settings and then header loss all factor into that in that type of situation. Where do you think we are in terms of growing degree day units, GDUs and so forth? I saw some data out of Lamberton. We're not too far off from the normal and historic average, pretty close, maybe a little bit, but by and large, I know we've had some warmer days, but also there's a contribution here at that temperature factor, even at night, isn't there?
Yeah, you know, high nighttime temperatures help to keep the daily total growing degree accumulation up. But kind of surprisingly, you know, at the start of the season, everybody was predicting above normal growing degree days, and that continued for a while. And then it just continued to rain and rain, and the growing degree day accumulation has been less. We've had stretches of quite cool weather. We really haven't had that many hot, unbearable days or weeks. You know, I think we're kind of behind on growing degree day accumulations. And then coupled with that, the hazy skies and stuff, I mean, it's not really optimal conditions for corn production. You know, typically when we have sufficient moisture like this, you know, we'd like to see daily highs of at least 86 degrees, and if not, into the low 90s, and then having the nighttime temperatures kind of cool down. So, you know, I guess we take what we get, but it's definitely not, hasn't been ideal conditions for, you know, grain filling. Well, the good thing is we got sufficient moisture. So, you know, the rainfall keeps coming. That is helping us. You know, if the growing season, if we have an extended growing season where, you know, it doesn't shut down on temperatures and it kind of extends a little bit, I think that's definitely going to help us some. But yeah, it hasn't been ideal.
Yeah, I imagine that we won't see black layer physiological maturity to, you know, sometime into September, you know, obviously. But I think always the worry, Jeff, and we don't have anything on the forecast immediately, is, you know, is a frost situation that develops. But from a crop growth and development standpoint, we want to be that to that area and beyond, aren't we, for good kernel depth and condition and so forth, and in terms of keeping our frost off there and keeping real well into physiological maturity is my point.
Yeah, the general guideline is 60 days from silking to black layer. So, you know, a lot of the corn was silking around between 24th of July to maybe August 1 or slightly later for corn that was very far behind. So I think it's going to, you know, probably be the 24th of September or later for most of this corn. And, you know, I think that should be sufficient time before the first hard freeze. But, you know, we'll kind of see what happens and take it from there.
Well, I know that's it's certainly the something that we are going to be keeping an eye out to. Now, there are farmers and so forth that are engaged probably in making corn silage. I know any comments there about the timing? We're not quite to that point yet. We want to be a little farther along, don't we?
Yeah, half milk stage. So we got some time yet before that. But you know, with the variability out there, you know, things to keep an eye on will be, you know, what's the crop maturity like, you know, especially in these fields that are highly variable. So you're going to want to try to balance that and try to make sure you get it before it gets too dry. Something to think about.
Those are normally some of the issues that people deal with in terms of that. Any last comments about going out? If you want to take a little bit of a yield check in the field, there's historically been various methods over the years. Even your predecessor, Dale Hicks, was involved with some of this a number of years ago in the different ways. But the kernel count method could give you an indication, but it has some drawbacks. I mean, when you think about kernel depth versus, you know, hand harvesting and weighing, any brief comments about trying to get a handle on that and how much you really want to read into some of these yield estimates?
Well, I think you can get fairly accurate by the kernel estimate method. So basically what that involves is you go out there, you harvest all the ears in 1/1000th of an acre. And then on every fifth ear or so, you count the number of rows per ear and then kernels per row, and then you calculate the average. So now you know the number of ears per acre, you know, the rows per ear, kernels per row. And then based on that, you're able to calculate how many kernels per acre you're going to have. And then what you do is you divide that number by the number of kernels per bushel. And kernels per bushel is estimated. For today's hybrids under good conditions, they're going to be, they're going to typically be 75,000 to 85,000 kernels per bushel for today's hybrids. Under exceptional drought stress, very small kernels, it may take 90,000 kernels to produce a bushel. On the other hand, if you got very large kernels, then due to good growing conditions and maybe a low plant population, then it may only take 70,000 kernels to produce a bushel. So you can get accurate on the kernel count, but then what the trick is trying to estimate the how many kernels per bushel, you know. So you're probably looking at somewhere between 75,000 and 85,000, depending on the kernel size. And it's still kind of tough to estimate that because we still got quite a bit of the grain filling period left. You know, but I think this can get you, you know, fairly close within reason. At minimum, it can get you out there to look at the ears and the pullback on the tips and that type of thing. You know, you can calculate a number, but you can also just look at the ears and kind of eyeball it. And in a lot of cases, you know, one can tell if it's going to be, you know, 200 bushel, 220 bushel corn just by looking at the ears and past experience. So I, you know, you kind of can take it for what it is, but I think, you know, if you really want to know what your yield's going to be, it's good to get out in the field, walk them, and actually assess what your plant population is and what the ears look like.
I guess last thing in terms of that, you guys a lot of variability, but when you're out in the field, I think we touched on a little bit before when we talked about some of the symptomology. We had some concerns, obviously, with the rainfall and nitrogen, but, you know, we're going to start to see translocation and mobility, you know, in terms of the plant. So those lower leaves on a corn plant, they're going to change. And so that might not all be nitrogen and sulfur. There could be other factors, but normal maturity and so forth. So it becomes a little bit more dicey as to what to pin it down at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think nitrogen deficiency is going to be a big part of it. What we see with the senescence on the lower leaves, and you know, that's going to be exacerbated as we get closer to the harvest here. You know, something to keep an eye on is going to be stock quality. So, you know, you want to like try to push on the stalks at ear level, or even cut them off and look at the pith at the base of the plant as we get closer to harvest. You know, in stalks that are hollow on the inside or that break easily when they're pushed over, you know, that's an indication that, you know, they're at higher risk for stalk lodging and that we'd want to harvest those fields earlier. So, you know, the areas of the fields that have been under stress, either due to water, excess water, and or nitrogen deficiency, and especially corn on corn. These are going to be scenarios where, you know, you might want to take a look and kind of assess the standability of the crop before harvest.
Thanks, Jeff. We're going to switch over and bring in Seth. So, Jeff, if you can hang on for us a little bit, if we have questions at the end, that would be great, or last comments. Seth Nave is able to join us. He's at a meeting out of state, but he was able to get up early enough and join us on this soybean situation here across the state of Minnesota. So, Seth, I know that a lot of folks have been estimating soybean yield. The DTN digital crop tour occurred, and they're forecasting 51.4 bushels per acre yield in Minnesota. But I want to go back and talk about the crop progress report, because it indicated as of Monday that blooming in Minnesota had reached 96%. Soybeans setting pods were at 78%. The very interesting thing here is that they indicated that that was 9 days behind both last year and the average. Now, the crop itself was 64% good to excellent, but I've heard that before from other people. Any comments on that? Is that expected, unusual? Do we need to worry about it, or will things catch up? But we still got a ways to go yet here, don't we?
For sure. This is a really unique year, and I think we can basically trace this delayed reproductive phases onto this kind of coolish temperatures we've had over the past month or so. It's a pretty good description of what we always talk about as soybean agronomists, that flowering is really driven pretty primarily by day length, and that the crop gets up and going. We've got a kind of a juvenile period in soybean in the northern states that keep us from flowering right away, but we get flowering relatively early, and it's relatively predictable based on day length. But then heat units really start to kick in towards the end of the year. So increasingly through the summer, heat units become more important for those developmental stages than day length. And so you can see, if you look at the charts for development in Minnesota, that we were right on schedule through July. And then starting in early August, then we started to slip a little bit, and now we're back to maybe, you know, like USDA says, 9 days behind. So it's noticeable. You can see it in the fields. The crop is behind. This is separate from the other issue that we have is short beans this year. That is a combination of cool temperatures with the wet weather. But both of those factors are important. I would say you asked a lot of questions, so I'm going to ramble on just a little bit here. But the importance of this delay is really critical for us. It basically is shifting this reproductive phase a little bit more. And Aníbal Cerúto is a visiting professor that's working in my lab, and he's been leading a project to look at the critical period in soybean. So the time period that's most important for yield establishment in soybean. And we're starting that right now, kind of this R4, R5 is really, and R5 and a half is really the most critical period. So we're really at the peak of that critical period in soybean. And so this is the time, and it makes sense. We've always talked about August makes beans, but we're really in probably the most important week or weeks in soybean development right now. And this is when the crop is really made. So if we go back to R4, we pretty much, that's the beginning of the critical period. And we pretty much had at least our rows closed by that time. So the crop was at least capturing all the light out there. We didn't have a lot of wasted light just hitting the ground at R4. It would have been nice to have it earlier to build a little bit more machine to make the yield at the end. But having it by R4 is the critical piece. And now it's really this weather we've had this week and next are really going to make this yield for us. So it's an important time. I think if we've got good warm temperatures over the weekend is really going to help. Cool temperatures coming in the longer term is not going to help us very much. And it's going to kind of hold the crop back just a little bit more and drag it on. So just to kind of round out this timing thing, yes, this delay is going to continue to shift all the way through. Even though photo period is important for setting the end period and maturity, we're mostly on heat units by the end, and so it's basically going to delay maturation a few days. It's not going to be 9 days, but we're going to be delayed. And so as long as we have good temperatures, as moderate temperatures, and we hold with good, you know, we've got good soil moisture. So if we have good moderate temperatures all the way through the end of September, we're going to be okay. But if we get hit by an early frost, or we've got other problems, or just more cold weather, could really, cause us some problems.
Typically, you know, we get continued growth in the month of August, and you'll get, you know, other branching and so forth that it starts out. And so subsequently you'll have beans, you know, at some point here at various maturities in terms of size and development and so forth. Now, we've had some rain in places, places in southern Minnesota had an inch, but now we're getting more scattered. Is that going to be a factor people have to look at as well? Is in fact that we talked about variability in the field, but variability within the plant itself, in the soybean plant, consideration of, you know, going into harvest here as you take samples and you make those decisions, whether you have large beans, small beans, green beans, et cetera. Is that going to be more impactful this year as things drag out?
Well, I'll turn it on your question on its head. That's actually beneficial to soybean. And this is where the yield comes from. This is how we get good yields, is those late developing seeds. So I have a really large bone to pick with a lot of folks that talk about flower retention and pod retention early on. Everybody wants to make soybean into a corn plant that's, you know, we set yields early on, and it's absolutely not true. There's a bunch of research money going into a stupid study on maintaining pods and flowers in plants. It's just a waste. It's an absolute waste of money because soybean is source limited. And so that's what we're talking about. We're talking about this period right now where this plant needs to just crank out a bunch of energy and start making seeds. And it's really just happening now. And the soybean has plenty of pods and plenty of seeds out there. People shouldn't be concerned about limited numbers of pods unless they were in a really stressed area, or like Jeff says, is in some tough areas within fields that were drowned out and the crop was really delayed, or in replant areas. And we can talk about that later. But there's that soybean, even though it's short, there's a lot of pods out there. There's an opportunity to fill these things, and we could have exceptional yield. Soybean seeds can grow, and Jeff mentioned this too, is the seed size isn't critical in corn, but the seed size is really the flex in soybean, and we could have exceptionally large seed in some of these plants that are short with low pod set. If we have good weather, obviously we've got good soil moisture. So we could have good, very good yields in these areas, much better than it might look based on this, you know, kind of shortish plant. Every farmer will agree that short soybeans can produce very high yields. There's no question about it. The plant hasn't wasted any extra energy making extra vegetative material this year. If we have good conditions, it's going to crank out some really good yields in those areas. And lastly, I just like to, you know, remind folks that even though we have a lot of heavy soils in Minnesota, every farm has some place that probably is a little bit sandy or lighter soils or hilltops that always get nicked by shortage of rain during August. And we're going to find out the importance of those, of a full soil profile and the value, you know, the value of that this year. It could very well outweigh some of those low drown out areas just by some of these lighter soils. So extending on what Jeff said earlier about drone imagery and calculating areas and fields, I think that's the kind of thing that farmers, if they really are interested in this, they can do it in soybean too, is they could take a look at their fields and look at those drown out areas or replant areas and calculate a yield on those, and then look at their normal average yields. But then they should also look at areas of their fields that are generally lower yields because they have a coarse textured soil and low soil water holding capacity. Those areas of fields are going to yield better than normal. And so maybe some of this will even out in some fields.
Two quick things. I'm wondering, Phyllis, if you would mind to put in the chat the link for the homepage, Strategic Farming. If there was a comment, somebody wants to know where to go and to find past events, recordings, and so forth, that would be good, or a link. But last thing here, Seth, if you're going to go out in the field and scout, in addition to yield, okay, are there some other things that you need to be looking at in terms of plant health, soybeans? Typically right now, we're all worried about soybean aphids. And in fact, earlier in the chat, we can put it up again. There's a link to a really good crop news about soybean aphids that was came out this past month on the 13th by Dr. Bob Cook and other authors as well. But that is causing some consternation, obviously, and yield reductions, and people have to scout for that. But in addition to aphids, are there some other plant things to consider in terms of health and development and so forth to help you guide in terms of perhaps even a year from now in terms of selection?
Absolutely. And so I'm probably going to get on my horse here a little bit and or soapbox and be a little bit preachy about this, but hang on. This is really, really critical because in some ways we have a real opportunity this year because we have an environment that could really produce a lot of disease organisms that could really tug on our soybean yields this year. I don't know what's going to be the end result of this, but there's clearly a potential. Farmers should know what they have in their fields. Every farmer is going to be sold a whole bunch of crap over the winter to protect their crop from some disease or organism out there. And honestly, if farmers don't know what they have, they shouldn't be buying something to protect them from that thing, whatever that thing is. And every salesman's going to tell them that they're losing yield by some organism. But the farmers really need to determine whether that's an issue for them or not. And they shouldn't be buying stuff to protect them from stuff that they don't have in their fields. And this would be a really good year to identify, you know, it could be the worst case scenario for some diseases. And, you know, it doesn't mean that they're not going to get other diseases in other years, but this could be a good test for farmers to really identify what they have in those fields and what the variability is. And farmers are farming across a lot of fields and a lot of geographies and a lot of soil types. They should know which fields have which problems in order for them to be able to manage those fields in the next year. These aren't problems they can solve this year, but this would be a really great time for them to identify what they've got going on in these fields. Sorry for my soapbox.
That's fine. I'm going to just ask you one last question here on whether you think whether this is actually going to happen necessarily, but the USDA is estimating 49 bushels per acre here. The DTN on their digital is estimating 51.4. Is that all within the realm of possibility? Obviously, every farm is going to be different. Every field is going to be different, but these are averages across the state.
Yeah, I'm totally with Jeff here. The question is all about variability within fields. That's really the question here is we're going to have such ranges within fields that it's really difficult for anybody to estimate these things. And so I think these estimates are going to be, overall, the estimates are going to be poorer estimates than they normally are because of the variability within fields. And then we have variability at larger scales, county level, and then we have variability across the state that's going to be large this year. So these things are all lead to more error in these things. So, and these are honestly just absolute guesses. And as I just want to remind everybody, the yield is being formed today and tomorrow and next week. So whatever number there is today really kind of gives us, you know, what we have out there today is a good indication of what our potential is. But everything else is a guess. So it's all going to happen from here out. We could have 40 and we can have, you know, we could have 60. So let's hope for the latter see what we get. But I honestly do think that we could be, I think we're going to be reminded of how important water is in August. And we're going to learn a lot this year about how critical those critical rainfalls are to a crop. And when we've got good soil moisture, we're not going to be limited. And this could produce a pretty amazing crop in some of those areas that we've struggled in the past.
Okay, very good. Jeff, you're still with us. Any other thoughts that you had on corn before we close it out today that we didn't touch on?
No, I think we pretty much covered it all.
Okay, great. And, you know, the good thing is we can communicate with people through crop news. So as things develop weather-wise, things that are impactful on the crop, whether they be weed, insect, disease, and so forth, certainly that's another avenue of communication. Seth and I are involved in a podcast, a Minnesota Cropcast, and we have different guest speakers, including another one coming up this next week, Bob Cook, in terms of soybean aphids as well. Seth, any last thoughts that you had or things that we didn't touch on?
No, I since Dave didn't ask, I'm here in San Francisco today. And so I'm taking part in the Soy Connect meeting, and it's a group, it's a large meeting. Several hundred participants come from all over the world. We have folks from 62 countries here, and they're soybean purchasers. And so we're connecting purchasers and sellers. So all the big exporters and food bean and companies are exporting, and I'm running into people that I've known for 25 years here in my position here at the university. So it's always a really good meeting. We're trying to get rid of these soybeans and soybean meal. The prices are really depressing, and farmers are super depressed about their soybean pricing. We're going to produce a lot of soybean meal that we have to get rid of in this country. So I just encourage everybody to buy some more pigs and chicken and feed some more animals. I think that's the best thing we can all do is feed some more animals and eat more meat. That'd be a good use for our soybeans. Maybe not good for your health, but it's good for our soybean prices.
Well, thank you, Seth. You've done a wonderful job for getting up 2 hours earlier than our time at 5:30 in the morning to join us here. So we appreciate your attendance via Zoom. So it works out very well. So again, we want to close off this program. We want to thank everyone here for attending Strategic Farming and our field notes. We also want to thank again our sponsors, the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council, along with the Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Council. This is our last session of the year on field notes. We always reserve the right because of Zoom. If there are situations that do develop and warrant, we'll be back at it certainly with a Zoom call, and we can do that in situations with that. Again, we want to thank you for attending not only today but for this past season. We'll be doing strategic farming with some other longer sessions coming up here in the winter time. So make sure that you have an opportunity to attend that and go to the page, and we'll let everybody know about those issues as well. So again, thank you again for attending.